So Rav said yesterday we did the Mishnah. We subdivided the Mishnah into three basic units, three categories. And the Mishnah keeps repeating the word puzzle to separate these categories. Rashi points out here, lulav ha-gozul, he says that lulav is a kafshal tamarim, that's the biblical term for lulav. And the Mishnah opens up with lulav. And then the Mishnah is going to go on and talk about the hadas and the arov, those are going to be separate mishnayos later on. Gozul, why is a stolen lulav posel? So Rashi says, posel, ulekachtem lachem ksiv, misha lachem. That since the Torah says lachem, the extra word lachem means it's got to be that you take yours. And whenever the Torah used the word lachem, it indicates that it has to be yours. You have to have ownership over it. So for example, we're going to have a long discussion in Mirtz Hashem about a lulav shel hegdesh, or a lulav shel maisa shein, all these categories. Is that called yours? Is it not called yours? Once you're designated for hegdesh, maybe it leaves your possession. In the case of a stolen lulav, Rashi insists that it's not yours. Now you and I might say, well, that's simple, that's pshita, maiko mashmala. And of course, if something is stolen, it's not yours. But that's not really true. Because the halach actually says that a gazlan has what we call kinyani gzela, which means he acquires ownership over the stolen object. How does he acquire ownership over the stolen object? It seems so paradoxical. I mean, it's not his, he stole it. And the answer is that the Torah says that ownership is defined by possession. And if a person has possession, he takes an object into his domain, then that itself gives him ownership. However, the gazlan is obligated to return the object. So you can't own something and say that you possess it when the law requires of you to fork it over and give it to someone else. And that's the case of Vehesha V'Sagzela. You have to return a stolen object. So that Vehesha V'Sagzela sort of moves in the opposite direction. It's an anti-force that prevents the gazlan from actually acquiring ownership over something that he has to return. However, that obligation to return the object is conditional. It's not absolute. It doesn't apply in all cases. There are going to be many cases in which the gazlan, once having acquired the ownership of the object, doesn't have to return the object. And there's a whole list of cases which I'm not even going to mention here because it'll just overwhelm us. There's so many different concepts. Anybody know what I have in mind here?
Shinui.
Yeah, what kind of shinui? Shinui Hashem and shinui Bailim. There's a whole bunch of shinui Rishus, a whole bunch of different cases. And the critical element in this entire equation is what's called Yeush. Do you remember about Yeush at all? What's Yeush? Phil,
despair.
Can you help me out here?
Despair,
right? When a person despairs, then it's in a sense the strings are no longer attached to the person who originally owned the object. So once he lets go, so to speak, of the object, it's out of his rishus because it's been taken into the domain of the gazlan. At the same time, the nigzal, the person who was victimized here, he doesn't even have hope. He's not holding out any hope to get it back. And in all those cases, the gazlan will acquire ownership. Rashi seems to be addressing the most nitty-gritty case. When I say nitty-gritty, what I mean is the following. It's bare bones. He stole the object, he stole the lulav in this case, and that's all that happened. Yeush didn't take place, and Shini didn't. Nothing took place over here. It's very fresh off the, you know, off the printing press. And all that happened here was gzela. And if all that happened here was gzela, then the gazlan has not yet acquired ownership over the object, and therefore it's not considered what? Lachem. And that's what you have to write down in your notebooks here, that you need lachem. This is a fundamental principle with regard to the Dalet Minim. It applies to some other mitzvahs, but not to all mitzvahs. The shofar doesn't have to be mine. But in the case of the lulav, it has to be mine. And that's because the Torah says, lekachtem lachem. Lachem mishalachem. Rashi, that we mentioned yesterday, this is a very profound and very intriguing Rashi says, yovesh, a dried lulav, Rashi says, is posel. Why is it posel? Debeina, we require a mitzvah mehuderes. And a mitzvah muderes means that we have to not just get the basic kind of low level esrog. You know, some people they'll buy an esrog. It looks pretty bad, if you know what I mean. But we'll have to see exactly what it looks like. I have some pictures to show you. In any event, so the Torah says, and this is not at all in the parsha of the Dalminim. Rashi quotes a parsha in Bishalach, and there it says v'anveu zekeli. V'anveihu, and therefore be'inon mitzvah mehuderes. Zekeli v'anveihu is the source for hidur mitzvah, to beautify a mitzvah. So if you buy a talis, it has to be a beautiful talis. If you write a sefer Torah, it's got to be a beautiful sefer Torah. And if you take a lulav, it's got to be a beautiful lulav. How beautiful is beautiful? I don't know. You know, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. And here, beholder really is, you can take that almost literally, you know, but he's holding on to the lulav. All right. Then we have Shalash Sheira. Rashi says, Ilan Sha'ovdim Oso Avodah Zara. They worship it as a deity. The Gemara is going to have to tell you why this is possible, why this is invalid. And now here, you may want to write yourself a little note that hopefully you'll remind me, we'll come back to it. When Rashi says, Ugemara Mefarish Taima, what Rashi means is that there's a chidush, there's an insight here into the Gemara, when the Gemara explains why Asherah is disqualified. We wouldn't have thought that the Gemara would come up with such a sophisticated reason why an Asherah is possible. And what you want to ask yourself is the following question: why the Gemara is going to come up with a very complicated structure which has to do with the size of the lulav, that believe it or not, the Asherah doesn't have the minimal size of the lulav. Very, very difficult concept to internalize that concept. It's so far from our grabbing onto it. You know, how do you understand? How do you understand that just because it was worshipped as an idol, therefore it's no longer has a minimum size? You know, it's very difficult. So if you want to write a note for yourself, the question is, we have a principle called Mitzvah Avoah Ba'Aveira. Do you remember about this one?
Yeah.
Okay, Mitzvah Avoah Ba'Aveira. Okay, now I don't know what this means. Hopefully by 9:30 or whenever we finish today, we'll have a little bit more of an understanding of what this means, mitzvah above avera. But basically it means you can't mix avera and mitzvah. Those two don't combine together. They don't integrate very well. So the question we're going to ask, if you want to make a note of it, it's premature now, but just previews of coming attractions, is why does the Gemara have to come up with such a complicated, sophisticated, abstract answer to the question why a lulav shel Asherah is disqualified? I have a simple answer. Because you can't combine a mitzvah and an avera. And that's called mitzvah bab avera. And we're going to soon see that even in the case let's say you steal a matzah and you want to eat the matzah on Pesach, that's also going to be mitzvah bab avera. You know, you can't mix a mitzvah and avera together. They're antithetical. They have an anti-gravitational pull, so to speak. So that's what Rashi means by Gemara Mefarish Taima. Like, hold your breath until you get to the Gemara. You're not going to believe what you're going to learn in the Gemara. It's going to knock your socks off. That an Ilan Shel Asherah is possible because Kitusei Mechtash Yira doesn't have a shear, it doesn't have the minimum size of a lulav. Now, I have two lulavim in front of me. They're both exactly the same size. One is an Asherah, and one is not an Asherah. The Asherah doesn't have the right size. And the lulav, the regular lulav, has the right size. Does that make any sense to you?
No.
They're identical lulavim. It's very difficult. So Rashi says, hold out till you get to the Gemara. Maybe you'll figure it out. V'shalir ani dachas. Now we have most of the city was seduced to worship an idol. And that city has to be destroyed. And everything in the city has to be destroyed. So even if, let's say, you have a lulav tree that wasn't worshipped, but it has to be destroyed insofar as it's growing inside this city, and this city is called an ir anidachas. How do they translate nidachas into English? Does anybody have the English?
Subverted.
Subverted? Okay, I don't know what that means, but subverted. So we have...
It's been taken.
Now, I know the word subverted means, but I didn't know why they chose that. Okay, fine. So now we have an iradidachas.
Rubber.
Yes.
Does that mean it's designated to be burned, therefore you cannot...
Oh, you're ahead of me. Wait, let me just read one more word then. Mishum de l'sreifakot. It's designated to be burned.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if it's designated, it's as if it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, you can't have ownership, so...
Oh, interesting. So Rashi doesn't say anything about ownership. Rashi says that it doesn't have the shear, it doesn't have the minimum size of a lulav. Take a look at Rashi. So we'll get back to Ben's question in just a minute. But let's read the Rashi, okay? Because today we want to read Rashi, maybe we'll get to some Tosis in. So the Rashi says the following, Irani dachas mishum delisreifakai. It's designated to be burned. Very well. Very well said. I like the way you said it, Ben. It's designated to be burned. Okay. Dichsiv. Now Rashi quotes a pasuk, and the pasuk says, we read it very recently, Veskol shlola tichbots. You gather together everything in the city, and then the Torah says you have to burn it, let it go up in smoke. Oh. Says Rashi, the lulav that's growing in that city, why is it disqualified? Rashi says, lulav ba'i, what does ba'i mean? It requires... a shear, and what's the minimum shear? Dalet tfachim. Interesting, dalet tfachim. I mean, the Mishnah says three tfachim. Rashi says four tfachim. Okay, we'll work that out in a minute. Kiddel kamon, and that's a Gemara later on. And daf lamid beis, amid beis. Oh, the cave on incense lahai l'sreifakai. Now the whole city is designated for sreifa, including the lulav that's inside the city. Is therefore Rashi says ein shi'uro kaya. You know, you might look at the lulav and say, wow, it looks like a very tall lulav. It's not only it's 4 amos high. It's the largest lulav in history, right? The Guinea Books of Records, we said, right? But nevertheless, ain't shiuro kayam, it's not considered as if it exists as a shiur, till sarif dami, kis sarif dami. What does kis sarif dami mean? What does kid mean?
It's tantamount.
It kis sarif means the chaf is called a chaf hadimyam. It's as if it was burnt already. Now, where do we have such a halacha that something that, since it's designated, it's going to be burnt, therefore it's considered, it's burnt?
That couldn't be
David?
Me.
That's what I was thinking. Enlo dami. Someone sneaks into your house.
Oh, is that what you mean? A burglar or something like that? Is that what you meant?
Let's say you kill someone who's...
What did you mean?
Somebody's been sentenced.
Oh, sentenced to death. Yeah. Oh, I see. He's a trefer. That's called a trefer. A trefer is someone who's been sentenced to death. And if you kill a trefer, then you're not culpable under the law of murder, because he's considered to some extent dead. You have a similar concept in an animal. An animal is called a trefer if it's going to die. How do I know it's going to die? Because we have 18 categories of trefer. These are internal injuries to internal organs, and these are critical vital organs in the body, and we know that within a certain reasonable period of time, and the animal is going to die. It can't survive in that state. You know, it's missing a major function, a vital organ. And in that case, the animal is considered trefa, which means that you can't shecht it. Normally, shechita takes the animal from the state of being alive to the state of being what? Being dead. But here, it's already considered dead. But in the case of srefa, we have to know what this means, kisaruf dami. Okay, so let's just emphasize that we have a number of questions today. Question number one, why is it that Rashi says that in the case of a lulav hagazel, Rashi says that it's disqualified because of lochem, right? Lochem means that it's got to be mishal lochem, you have to have ownership of. Rashi does not invoke the principle of mitzvah ba ba'avera. Question number two, which is very similar, Rashi says that in the case of Asherah, which has been worshipped, that tree, Rashi says, "B'gemara mafarish taima." That we don't know why it's considered excluded. That's the intuitive answer to that question. Again, would have been mitzvah b'avera, but we're not going to apply the principle of mitzvah b'avera. And then we get on to the case of ira nidachas. Now, ira nidachas, that I understand very well. That this lulav is not called mitzvah b'avera. Why not?
No, I was going to add for Asherah, who we read 20 minutes ago, tishrufum ba'esh. It's also Rashi doesn't come along and say it's also kedushah.
Yeah, it seems that that Rashi, it's very strange. Rashi gives you he reveals the secret at the very end, you know, and when he gets to Yeridachas, That's why he reveals it. But Nachum is asking, so why didn't Rashi tell me that already up front when he got to Asherah? Then there he says, B'gmor Farish Taima. And they're both the same reasoning. Very strange. Very strange. Yeah. But I forgot already what I was asking you.
Why is it different there? That doesn't mitzvah
Hababa Vera doesn't apply. Oh, yeah. Why doesn't it apply to your Nidachas?
Because it's already an Avera that's happening by.
Well, no, it's an Avera happening, but not with what?
Well, not to the Lula.
Exactly, not to the Lula. That's what I wanted to hear. The Avera is happening in the city, but you can't tell me that I can isolate this particular Lula. Nobody worshipped that Lula. But the whole Shalal, the whole possessions of the city, all have to go up in smoke, including the Lulav. And therefore Rashi says it doesn't have the shear of a lulav because it's kisarufdom. So we have to understand what Rashi means by kisarufdom. Okay then? So that's what we have in Rashi. Now we get on to the more sophisticated part of this Mishnah. And until now the Mishnah has been talking about what I call halachic or legal disqualifications. You know, you have a disqualification because you don't own something. You have a disqualification because it's going to have to go up in smoke. It has a certain din. But, you know, we're talking about beautiful lulavim. You know, I assume if the guy already stole a lulav, he must have gotten a good lulav. You know what I'm saying? He was tempted to steal that lulav. And Asherah Nira and Yachas Rashi says is kisarif dami. It's as if it's burnt. I mean, I'm looking at a beautiful lulav over here. But now we get to the category of not such beautiful love. And the first one on the category is Niktam Rosho. Rashi says, Niktam Rosho, Pasul, Delo Havi Hadar. And now Rashi is invoking the parasha of the Dalet Mina, which is an Amar, and there it says, Lekachim Lachem, pre-ates Hadar. Hadar means it's got to have a certain beauty to it, and it shouldn't be blemished. And Rashi's saying that if Niktam Rosho, it's not Hadar. Okay, Shkoya, thank you, Rashi. But tell me what Niktam Rosho is. That Rashi doesn't tell us. So for that, Rabosa, we want to learn Tosfos. Niktam Rosho. Tosfos says, Lecha'ora. Now, Rabosa, whenever you see the word Lecha'ora, what do you know?
Primal fish.
But what do you know? What do you deduce from the word Lechora?
It's something he's not sure of.
Right, no, even more. Yeah, exactly. That Tosfos is suggesting something that he's going to reject. He's going to backtrack on it. So keep in mind that we're going to put a lot of work into understanding the Lechora and try to figure out what Niktam Rosho means. But yet, at the end of the day, I don't want you to be disappointed or let down. Tosfos is going to reject this, and I know this from the word Lechora. Right? Lechora means at first glance. Okay, what does the word Mairi mean?
We see.
Who can tell me what Mairi? No, Mairi doesn't mean we see. What does Mairi mean?
We're talking about.
Exactly, we're talking about. So what's the case that we're talking? This is what Rashi skips. Rashi, for some reason, doesn't address the question, what are we talking about? Maybe Rashi understood that it was simple. Niktam Rosho, you just chopped off the head of the lulav. Yeah, but Tosfos is not happy with that because there are many different parts to the lulav. Let's just mention offhand, if you don't mind, three different parts to the lulav. Okay then? And this hopefully will help us as we go along. Okay? What's this, Rabbi Osai? This vertical, very strong shidra, piece in the middle that goes from the top to the bottom, right? That's the shidra. Now, it's very interesting because the word shidra really comes from the laws of trephos, which means animals that have certain internal internal injuries and they therefore cannot be eaten. And the sugya in Masech Tehillim goes through the various organs of the body and different kinds of injuries and which would invalidate the animal or set it up as a trepho, invalidate it for shchita. And one of his is the shidra. So it's interesting that the word shidra really comes from the biological world of the human, of the human body, and it's borrowed here in the context of the Dalet Mina. And I mentioned that at the outset as we begin learning this perek, because I think we're going to see over and over again that there's a very direct and striking parallel between the biological laws of the human being and the laws of Elul. In any event, so we're going to talk about the shidra. Okay. Now, the shidra takes us all the way up to the top, and at the top we have the following. We have what's called olim, Okay, these are the leaves. Again, you and I don't see them as leaves so much, you know, but they're called the olam, right? These are the, you could actually take apart the lulav and take all the olam out and stretch them out, and you'll be left with the shidra. That's all you're left with. So those are the olam. Okay. Now the Mishnah talks about Rosho. So if the Mishnah talks about Rosho, what kind of olam do you think we're talking about? The head. What does that mean? Can anybody give me another a synonym here for the word Rosho here?
Crown.
Crown? Okay, maybe a crown. The crown usually gets round at the top. So a tip. Excellent. So we're going to talk about the tip of the... Well, let me try another word. Very similar, but just change one letter. The top, right? Let's talk about the top. I'll tell you why. You know, you may think I'm being very picayune about this, but there's going to be a fundamental difference between what we call the Olim Elyonim, which means the top leaves. So let's say you go up the Shidra, and it's at a certain point, what you'll see is that the Shidra shoots out into a whole group of top leaves. Again, we're going to have to see this. Don't get nervous about it. We'll show you the pictures. And we'll get the film and we'll go see it, you know, down in the Beis Horah, whatever it is. So those are called the Olam Elyonim. Now, theoretically, coming out of the Shidra, you know, you may have a whole bunch of Olam Elyonim coming out. Again, hopefully they're not spread out like that, because that's going to be the next part of the Mishnah. That's Nifridu Olam. We're not up to that yet. Okay? So this would be the top leaves. Okay, now, Richard mentioned something else called the tip. Does anybody know what that's called? Okay, that's called the tiomes. Now, the word tiomes, the root, the shorish of the word, is tom, or tiom. Anybody know what that is in English?
Twin.
A twin. Excellent, a twin. Now, the reason for the word twin here in this context, and we're talking about the tip of the lulav, that very, very top, not just the top part of the lulav, but there's something over here, and believe it or not, this splits into two twin leaves. Now the truth is, I don't want to disappoint you, but in our lulav, what we have, again, there are hundreds of species of lulav. The trouble with us is we're only familiar with basically one or two species of lulav, but there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of species of dekel trees, of date trees, of palm trees. But in any event, in our palm trees, you might not be able to find the tiomes if I simply identify it as a double leaf, as a twin leaf. Why? Because all the leaves on our lulav are twin leaves. You can pull off any leaf from a lulav tree. Again, we'll see about the canary tree. That's going to be a very basic issue about the canary tree. But in our lulavim, you can take out any one of the branches, any one of the leaves, and you'll find that it's made up of two parts to it. It's a twin. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you take your fingers on the outside of these two parts in any particular leaf, what happens to your fingers? They get white. Why do they get white? Have you ever done it? Oh, you don't do it, because unless you have a apostle lulav. I don't know if there is such a thing as a apostle lulav, by the way. It's almost a non-entity. Wow. Yeah, you really have to do a lot, you know, a lot to your lulav too. I don't know if you've ever actually seen a puzzle of lulav. We're going to be spending months on a puzzle of lulav. Where is it? I never saw it. I want to see a puzzle of lulav. You know, say, okay, anyway. So what is this white powder? This white powder that you'll see on the lulav, again, if you've ever taken it apart, that white powder indicates that it's a lulav tree. It's a dekel tree. One of the basic problems with the canary tree, which we'll get to, is that it doesn't have that white powder on it. But in any event, what does Niktam Rosho mean? Well, that's what we want to focus on. So everything I told you today was a little bit, you know, a little bit on the left and on the right, but now we get to the center. You know, we're talking about Niktam Rosho. So who can give me three possible answers to the question of Niktam Rosho? The first answer would be what? The Shidra. Right? Because the spine goes very, very high and the top part of the spine was broken.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to make a note of it, that's going to be the Shitas HaRaivid. Okay, the Raivid Shita, one of the Rishonim. All the other Rishonim disagree. But the basic Machlokas Rishonim, this is where the controversy lies, is what are we talking about Rosho? Are we talking about the Olim HaElyonim? Or are we talking about the tiomis? Okay, the tiomis is that tippy-tippy top, which we said is the twin leaf on top, because the lulavim only had a twin leaf on top. So there was only one leaf in any given lulav back in the day that had this property of being a twin that was folded over, so to speak, as a double leaf. And that was called a tiomis. So what exactly broke over here? Did something broke? Was the Olam Elyonim broke, or did the Tiomis broke? Now, what is it about the word Rosho that would give me a little bit of a direction here, meaning that would tip the scale or point us in one particular direction? Again, we're leaving out the Shidra now. That's the famous Shita Saraifit, that Niktam Rosho means the Shidra itself was broken. The spine was broken. I hate to say those words. It gives me the chills when you think of it. So leave out the Raivin now. So we have two possibilities left because we excluded the Raivin. So we're left with two. What are those two?
Snapped off the top of the...
Either what was snapped off, the Olam Elyonim, or the tippy top, which is called the Tiomis. Why does the word Rosho give me a little bit of an indication?
Seems the highest thing, the north. The highest...
No, I'm looking at... No, this could be the Rosho, because this is the head of the lulav, but grammatically, what is Rosho? Is it singular, or is it plural?
Singular.
It's singular. Now, if you talk about Olim Elyonim, that would mean plural. You know, then it should say Roshehem or something like that. But Rosho would seem to indicate that we're talking about one head. And one head would have to be the Tiomis in this case. And that's what I think Tosus is saying in the Lechora. The only problem is he has the word Lechora. If not for the word Lechora, let's bracket the word Lechora. And Tosus says, Myri, what we're talking about is Bishnei Olim Ha'emtsayim Hayotzim Mirosh Hashidra. And basically Tosus is giving us a dictionary definition of the Tiomis. What is the tiomes? It's called a twin because it's made up of two leaves that are attached to each other. And those are the two leaves that are exactly in the middle of the lulav. And they yotzim, and they go out of the shidra, berosh hashidra, from the top of the shidra. So there's one twin leaf. This is the twin leaf. Okay, the twin leaf. I have a friend of mine, his wife gave birth to triplets just a few days ago. So you have to say mazel tov three times over. Could you imagine raising triplets after having twins? So they have five children now, the oldest of which is not yet 3 years old.
Wow.
So these are the Shiks. You know, the family's name is Shik. I said to the Shiks, you're populating the world, but who's going to raise five kids below the age of three? I would have to hire three or four nurses. A couple of nurses for the night shift, another couple of nurses for the day shift. I don't know. Anyway, there's a whole to do in the hospital about feeding these three kids. They want to feed them in a different way and not the normal way. They said, we can't handle it, it's too much for them. Anyway, so the case of Tiomis here would be called in Tosus's language Niktam Rosho, because Rosho means that very, very tippy top of the lulav, which are the twin leaf. And again, they're called a twin because they get together and they form, you know, two halves of a whole, and that's called the tiomis.
And it's using the word rush as part of the definition.
Correct. The word rush is the definition. Rush equals tiomis. But Tosa says lechora. And what does that tell you, Phil?
It may not be.
It may not be. And why not? I will kash. I have a question. And this question comes from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. He's one of my all-time favorites. I love Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Whatever he says anywhere in Shas, you know I'm going to support Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Okay. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in the Gemara Daf Lamed Beis, Kaminyan Lev, says, Nitla hatiomes posel, which literally means if you remove the middle leaf, that double twin leaf in the middle, that goes all the way on top, and you simply remove it. You did a surgical operation and you remove it. It's possible. Now, what is the tiomis? The tiomis is exactly what we've been describing. Namely, what? Hain, they are, Osan Ha'olim, those two twin leaves, Haim Tsayu, in the middle of the Shidra, that gets shoot up from the Shidra. Veha, and in such a case, why did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi have to tell me that you removed it? Afilu b'niktam, nikta means it was broken. B'niktam rosho, even if it wasn't yet detached, posul. And what's kol shkein, Rabbi Osai? How much more so? Right? How much more so? Nitlo legamre. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was an Amora, and he came after the Mishnah. The Mishnah is explicit. The Mishnah says that if the top part of the lulav was broken, that's a broken lulav. We don't take a broken lulav. It's disqualified. It comes along with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and he says, well, you took off, you removed the top of the lulav. Shkayach, you know what I'm saying? Like, what did you add for me? Not only didn't you add anything, but you even subtracted something, because you're telling me that what's the psul here? Nital, right? Nitlatiomis. It was removed, implying that if it's still hanging on by some thread, then maybe it'd still be kosher. No. The Mishnah says, Niktam, if it was broken. And comes along with Yeshua and he says, Nitla. The only way out of this predicament is to assume that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is talking about one part of the lulav, and our Mishnah is talking about a different part of the lulav. So that means that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is talking about the tiyomes, and our Mishnah is not talking about the tiyomes. It's not talking about the rosh ha'emtsayim, those two leaves that combine together on the very top of the lulav. Because if that's what our Mishnah is talking about, then Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, instead of adding to the Mishnah, he is diminishing from the Mishnah, because he's telling me that the reason why it's possible is because Nitla Atiyomes, that middle leaf on the top, was removed. And therefore, Tosus says, Vitzarech Lomar, we have to go back to the drawing board, and we're forced, against our will, to reinterpret Niktam Rosho. We said it was Myri, we said it was talking about a case of Olam Emtsayim HaYotzei Mirosh HaShidra. No. Berov Olam Elyonim. Now, what word did Tosus add to our equation here?
Rov.
Excellent. We spoke about Olam Elyonim. And Tosus adds the word Rov. What is bothering Tosus? Why does he feel compelled to add the word Rov?
No, because someone will come and say you have to have call him and if it's only 90%, that's still kosher.
And what would be the other extreme? What could somebody say?
I was only a little bit came off.
Exactly. What happens if only one of the Olim Elyonim came? So in other words, there are two possible phantom adversaries here, so to speak, you know, who could counter against Tosus. One phantom would say, well, it's only if all the Olim Elyonim were broken. The other one would say, if one of the Olim Elyonim are broken. So let's assume that there are 10 Olim Elyonim. So one opinion might say, well, only if all 10 are removed, then it's possible. The other one, not removed, I should say broken, right? And the other opinion might say, well, if one of the 10, and the other, they're only left with 9, one is broken, then the lulav is possible. That's also considered Nitam Rosho. So we could interpret it in one of two ways before we get to Tosus. One would be Nitam Kol Rosho, and the other would be Nitam Mitzas Rosho, even part of the Rosh. So what is Tosus' answer? This is wrong, and that's wrong. Both extremes are wrong. How many Olam have to be destroyed?
Six
out of 10. Yeah. Your first name is Menachem, right?
Yeah. And I was talking about the length. We always
About the length. Oh, I don't know. Wow. That's a good question. I don't know
and
about
you're
the length.
About the numbers of,
yeah, I'm talking about the number of olim here. Because I think the rov is referring to the olim. Let's see if I can prove that to you. Maybe you're right. So if Lod Nika Roshamai be rov ha olim. He says rov ha olim. He doesn't say rov shel ha olim. You know.
So if the olim are broken, does it change the, according to this question, does it change the overall size of the lulav?
Well, again, as far as the size of the lulav, let's make ourselves very calm, and let's assume this is a gigantic lulav. Even if you would cut off all the olam elyonim, you would still have a shear of a lulav. But now what you have is a broken lulav, and Tosus says, "What broke? the Olam Elyon. What does the Tiyomis look like?
It's fine.
Fine, perfect. Nothing happened to the Tiyomis. Again, I don't know exactly, you know, the logistics of it, how that happened. It was very interesting that the Tiyomis was somehow protected. You know, he had a covering over the Tiyomis. Or a child started hacking away at the Olam Elyon, and he didn't touch the Tiyomis. He knew that his father would get very angry at him if he touched the Tiyomis.
What if it was the other way around? What would Tosfos was hold if the Olam Elyon?
Oh, that's where Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi comes along. And what does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say?
You have to remove the
Tiyomis. Even if all the Olam Elyon are what?
Are
perfectly healthy. What did he break? He broke the Tiyomis.
So he removed.
Oh, excellent. Comes along Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and he says the following. With regard to Rov Ha'olim Elyonim, all I need is what? To pasul the lulav. I'm going to be very mad. Oh, I only need Niktam. Niktam means it's broken, but it's still attached. So again, let me go over this. With regard to Rov Olim Elyonim, at what point I will already activate the psul of Niktam Rosho? The moment that Rov Elyonim are what?
Snapped,
are broken, even though
they're still attached.
But when I get to the Tiyomis, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, as long as the Tiyomis exists, it's okay. But if you remove the Tiyomis, then you've got a lulav without a Tiyomis. And I'm thinking out loud, Rabosai. Again, this is more for my 11:45 shiur, but I'm just trying to think with you for a moment. That maybe the difference between the Tiyomim and the Rov Olim is a very fundamental difference. What I mean is the following. That when you take apart the lulav into its various component parts, when you dissect the lulav, you might be able to categorize these different segments or parts of the lulav into two different categories. One category touches on the physical appearance of the lulav, almost like a human body, as we said before. The other is that there may be halachic elements in the lulav that have legal, very specific and very high-powered legal status. It's sort of like, again, you know, I'm influenced here by kashrut a lot, so because we learned zvachim here. You know, you might talk about the Beis HaMikdash structurally and talk about the different parts. And then there are certain parts of the Beis HaMikdash that are sanctified with a special holiness that they get new dinim, for example. So, for example, if the Ritzvah would have a crack in it, that would not passel any karbon, as long as the crack doesn't expose the ground below it. But in the case of the Mizbeach, if there's one crack in the Mizbeach is passel. That's called pagum, nifgam ha-Mizbeach. So I'm thinking out loud, that maybe when we talk about the Rov Olam Elyonim, we're talking about the structure of the lulav, the appearance of the lulav as an entity. And you've broken the Olam Elyonim, Rov, says Tosfos. That's already it's a different, what I call in Hebrew, Tsuras HaLulav. It's a psul in the Tsuras HaLulav. Okay, in the outward shape or appearance of the lulav. You know, Nebuch, you've seen older people that get, in Yiddish it's called eingebogen. How do you call it in English?
Stooped over.
What's the word? Stooped. Okay, there's probably a better word for it in English. But anyway, eingebogen in Yiddish, right? Yeah, osteoporosis. So we were, you know, I'll touch the chenel zikna, you know, you and I are more or less in the same age bracket, so we have to worry about these things now, you know what I'm saying? So we're going to talk about later a lulav that's eingebogen, a bent lulav that looks like this. It's called a kafuf. And we're going to talk about whether that's already a psul. You know, then the whole tsuras halulav changed. It doesn't look like a lulav. A lulav has to be straight and proud and stand straight. So he broke, or somebody broke the rov olam elyonim. That's already a psul in the tsuras halulav. Could be, I'm just thinking out loud, I don't know if anyone is going to think of this idea, that the tiyomis already is a different problem. You could have a lulav without a tiyomis. And the leaves could go up and up, and you and I might not even notice the fact that that one double leaf in the middle that goes all the way up from the shidra is missing. It's not an obvious heker, you know. It's not a shidra in the tzuras halula, but it could be that the tiyomis has a special status in halacha, and it defines the essence of the lula. It's kind of like the mizbeach in the azara. You know, it's not the ritzvah, and it's not the avir hamizbeach. It's the mizbeach itself. You know, it has that special tradition. So again, let's go over the Tosfos outside. Number one, Tosfos says lechora. Our mission of Nikam Rosho is talking about a breakage in the tiones. Tosfos says I can't maintain that. Why? Because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that the psul is nitla ha-tiomis, which means the tiomis was removed. Our Mishnah says it's enough if it was broken. So our Mishnah could not possibly be talking about a tiomis situation, because then Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would be very, very odd. He's not only not adding anything to the Mishnah, he's even subtracting something from the Mishnah. He's telling you that you're only psul in the niktam rosho if you remove the rosho. And our Mishnah says niktam rosho. Therefore, Tosfos says it must be that our Mishnah is not talking about the Tiomas at all. But Niktam Rosho refers to Rov Ha'olim Ha'lyon, and that itself makes the Lulav possible. In the case of the Tiomas, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says it's a special din that if the Tiomas is removed, that's not called a Lulav. It may look like a Lulav, it may smell like a Lulav, it appears as a Lulav, but it's not a Lulav. Inam. Now we get to the Inami of Tosfos. Okay. Inami means that I'm going to give you a second answer, and this second approach is going to justify our original lechora. Meaning we're going to go back to square one, we're going to assume that niktav rosho means the tiomes was broken. What question now do we have to ask?
What is
Rishu ben Levi? Exactly. Rishu ben Levi says the tiomes was removed. It's Trich Levi. What does Itzrich Le mean? It's justified. It's necessary. L'Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. What's the Chiddush of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? So Tosfos is going to now ask the following question. Which is better and which is worse? A broken Tiomis or a non-existent Tiomis? What would have been your intuitive response?
Non-existent.
A non-existent one would be worse, right? So Tosfos says, just the opposite. A broken Tiomis is worse than a non-existent tiomis. In other words, sometimes if you have a broken limb, sometimes it has to be removed, right? And when you remove it, the body is in better shape than having this, carrying along this injury, this broken limb. Menachem, you're in the medical field, so I don't know if you could help me with that. Can you give me an example of such a thing? From your finger. I didn't mean your finger. I didn't have that thought. I didn't want to get that personal, you know what I'm saying? So that's what Tosfos says. He says, "Itzrich leiler of Yeshua ben Levi lashmeinan de nitla, that if it's removed, the lulav is possible." Imagine, I would say that if it's broken, then it's possible. But if you removed it, then there's no ugliness to the lulav. Salkedaitach, I would have thought the chashiv hadar tvei, it's more beautiful. Me niktam, why? Because he completely removed the Tiomas. I mean, the logic of Tosfos is so beautiful. I get very emotional about these things. I mean, first Tosfos started with Tiomas, and then he said, well, we can't say that Niktam Rosho means Tiomas because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is completely off balance. Then Tosfos says that we have to assume that Niktam Rosho means Rov Roshe Ha'olim. Then Tosfos says, wait a minute, maybe, just maybe, I can justify the Chiddush of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, what he's adding, even though the mission of Niktam Rosho is talking about the Tiomas. So you would say, well, wait a minute, if the Tiomas is still hanging in there, that's a lot better than if you completely surgically remove the Tiomas. No, Tosfos says it's more beautiful in its outward structure if you just simply remove the Tiomas than if you see Nebuch HaLulav, which on top has a Tiomas that looks like this. Beautiful logic of Tosfos. Inami. Now Tosfos offers a third possibility, and he says, "Nitla achas min hatiomes, divinikdam lo mifsala elim niktamu shteha." Wow, this is amazing. Why is the tiomes called a tiomes, my friends? How many leaves does it have?
Two.
It's made of a twin leaves, right? What happens if only one of those two leaves were removed or broken? Now Tosfos is not differentiating between broken and removed, but he's differentiating between both leaves in the Tiomas and one leaf in the Tiomas.
It's not Tiomas anymore.
Oh, so that's good, Phil, but you're a step ahead of me. First, I'm going to use your svara in just a minute. But first, let's go through the mechanics of it, then we'll come to Phil what you want to say. So Tosfos says the mechanics is as follows. What would I have assumed if I only had a Mishnah? And why does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi add something that and enhance my understanding of the Mishnah? If I only had the Mishnah, what would it sound like if it would say Niktam Hatyomes? What was broken? One leaf or two leaves?
Two.
It sounds like Niktam Hatyomes. The Tyomes was broken. Comes along Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and he says, that's not pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to disqualify the lulav if even one of the two leaves of the tiyomis was broken. Let's see it inside. Inami nitla achas min hatiyomis. One of the two leaves that make up the tiyomis. Dibiniktam lo mifsala elim kein niktamushtem. Whoa, look at that. Is there a difference between Niktam and Nital? Shmuel?
I'm having all these thoughts about the way the psul occurred. Because the word Niktam sounded to me like it got mashed.
You mean like a human intervention, you mean, as opposed to like falling on the floor? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Okay. But I'm also thinking a lot about perhaps, I don't know if it's a good word, the angle of the cut. In other words, if a whole top of a lulav got cut off, everyone's going to say, for every reason, it's puzzle because the top leaves aren't there, so it's missing. It's no good, right?
Oh, excellent. Wait,
someone might pick a lulav off of a tree and want to make it look a little better and increase the angle on the end of it. And then they might really intentionally leave the last leaf. Like maybe those were dry parts or uglier leaves, right?
So what are you saying? So he removed one of the two leaves of the tiyomis.
Or maybe even more together, but the thing I'm thinking about is the angle. It did on an angle, so it improves. Right. It's a good word. It makes the lulav look more like a nicer lulav, maybe, that cut.
So again, I'm trying to understand the following. We have the Mishnah, and we have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi.
Okay.
Right. So the Mishnah says Niktam, mm-hmm. and Tosa identifies Rosho as the tiyomis.
Mm-hmm.
And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says Nital. What's just on a technical level, what's the difference between the Mishnah and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi?
So Niktam sounded to me like it got mashed.
One second, but I'm talking about Tosa. So are you with me in Tosa?
I'm with you.
Yeah. I tell you, we're both saying the Seir HaTorim. I always like to give Kavod Rishon to what we say in the text. So what does it say in the text? What's the difference between the Mishnah and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi?
He left some leaves there.
In the case of the Mishnah, both leaves were removed.
Right.
Again, we said that the Tiyomis is comprised of two leaves. In the case of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, only one. So is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi adding something to the Mishnah that I wouldn't have known?
Yes.
Yeah, because I would have thought, how radical of a change did you have to effectuate in order to pass the law? Okay. You had to remove what?
Sure.
Both leaves. Comes along Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and he says only one leaf. Wait a minute. If this be the case, is there a contradiction here between Rabbi Mishnah and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? See, technically we can't tolerate that. Why? Why can't Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi contradict the Mishnah?
He's not Mora.
Correct, he's only not Mora. The Mora can't paskin against the Mishnah. He can try to find a Brisa or another Mishnah and so forth and so on, but we only know from one Mishnah. Nobody questions Niktam Rosha. Comes along, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says one leaf. What do you mean one leaf? Niktam Rosha means two leaves. So what's the answer?
He's allowed to give an interpretation of the Mishnah. Those interpretations.
Yeah, but I'm asking. So, give me his interpretation. How would Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, if he was sitting here in this classroom, how would he defend himself and maintain that one leaf is enough when the Mishnah says you need to break two leaves?
Rosho is singer.
Again, are you giving a linguistic diuk in the Mishnah? I want to know just halachically, how do you reconcile the following two statements? One statement is that of the Mishnah, that you broke two leaves, and that's what makes the lulav puzzle. And one statement is that of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who says you only broke one leaf.
No.
Forget about, just leave out any diyukim, but I'm just saying, how do you reconcile those two? Halachically, those two laws. Because I don't want there to be a contradiction between Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and the Mishnah. Say it again, Don. Maybe what you said before is right. And I just, you know me, Buff, by now. Sometimes I have to hear it twice.
It's someone said it before, because it says Nichtam Rosho. So Rosho is singular, so maybe he's only talking about one of the leaves instead of...
you just want to say that if Shmuel ben Levi would reinterpret the Mishnah in Gantz, that there's only one leaf. No. That's not acceptable. No. What's the difference between Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and our Mishnah? There are two differences. One difference is that our Mishnah is talking about both leaves, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is talking about one leaf. What's the second difference?
Broken versus removing.
Exactly. Broken versus removing, as Steve says very well. Nikta means it was broken, it's still hanging on. So if you're breaking it, then how many leaves do you have to break in order to pass the lulav?
Two.
A very strange question. Both. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, because now Tosfos is assuming that it's more drastic if you remove than if you leave it on. He's not with that svara of the surgical removal. Therefore, you have to remove only one of them. It's a funny phrase, but in order to possible lulav, let's say you're the evil gobbler, you know, wants to apostle up lulavim. So if you, so then all you would have to do is remove
one.
Now, Rabosa, I realize that, you know, it's getting late. I do want to try to go through the Gemara with you in the next few minutes before I let you go. But the only thing I can do is implore you, and beg you, and request of you, to go over this Tosfos. Because I can go over it 50 times, but the main thing is that you go over it yourselves. Anyone who wants to stay after 9:30, we can have a whole little coffee clutch here and go over the Tosfos again. But this Tosfos, I'm telling you, Rabosai, first of all, it's going to open up windows in Shulchan Aruch as we get into the halachas of Dalet Vinim and Lulav. And secondly, it's such a beautiful Tosfos structurally. You know, it's so classic. It gives you a methodology of learning. Okay. So let's go through the Gemara, and we have about 7 minutes left, and I'll let you go at 9:30. Ritzchem Kaposik Vitani. What does Kaposik Vitani mean? The Mishnah did not qualify. That's called Kaposik Vitani. Meaning, I could have offered logically a qualification to the Mishnah. The Mishnah is enumerating the various disqualifications. They only apply on which day of Sukkot, if not for the Gemara? Only on the first day. But does the Mishnah indicate that they only apply on the first day? Now, what's the difference between the first day of Sukkot and the rest of the Sukkot? Which is Doraisa, which is the Rabbana? Obviously, the first day is Doraisa, L'kachtem Lachem B'yom HaRisha, the Torah says. That's on the 15th of Tishrei. The balance of the days of Sukkot, we only take a lulav midrabbanon that's based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, a takana zecher lemigdash. At the time of the Migdash, they took the lulav all 7 days. Today we take the lulav begvulin outside of the Migdash for 7 days to be mekayim of the mitzvah derabbanon, the rabbinic mitzvah of zecher lemigdash instituted by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So maybe with regard to Darbanans, we don't have to apply all these psulim. Don't get so finicky and so demanding and raise the bar on what constitutes a lulav kosher. Let's lower the bar as far as the balance of Yontif is concerned, because the rest of the days of Yontif are only Darbanan. And in fact, we will see that the halacha will be more pliable and flexible with regard to the rest of the days of Yontif. In two cases, one is called chaser, when there's a piece of the lulav or the esrog that's missing, and that'd be kosher for all 7 days except for the first day. And in the case of lochem, if I don't own the lulav. So, for example, in the case of a stolen lulav, Rashi says a stolen lulav is disqualified because of the absence of what?
Lachem.
Of lochem might be kosher for the rest of Yontif. So the Gemara says, Kaposik Vitani, the Mishnah doesn't qualify. If the Mishnah doesn't qualify, it means Loshna, it doesn't make a difference whether it's Yontif Rishon, Loshna be Yontif Sheni. The entire Sukkot is considered one entity, and all the psulim that disqualify Luv that enumerated the Mishnah apply all 7 days. Says the Gemara, Bishlemi Yavesh, I understand. Yavesh would be a classical case that should apply all 7 days, because that's a structural negation, so to speak, of the Mishnah. It's a real mum. It's a blemish in the Mishnah. It's absolutely dry. We'll soon see exactly how absolutely dry it is according to one shita. If you were to put your thumbnail next to the leaf of the lulav, it's going to crumble and it's going to snap. That's how dry it is. It's really a dry lulav. And Hadar Be'inu V'leka, the Torah says, pre-eats Hadar. It's got to be Hadar. It's got to have some beauty to it. A dried up lulav is not beautiful. But Elagazul, in the case of a stolen lulav, here at Kaposik Vitani really bothers me. That's a thorn in my side. Because what do you tell me? All 7 days it's possible? Why? Bishleim Yom Tov Rishon, I understand very well the first day, the Tzid. Lachem. Ulakachtem lachem. Bayom HaRishon Mishel lachem. It's got to be yours. El B'yom Tov Sheni Amaylo. Why is this lulav that's stolen possible on Yom Tov Sheni? Let's say I borrow your lulav. If I borrow your lulav, which is called Sha'ul, then I can be Yotze the second day and the rest of Yotif. So why should Gozel be any different than Shaul? Om Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimba Yochai. And here we get on to Daf Lamed Omen Aleph. Mishum the Havile Mitzvah Haba'a Be'Avera. We cannot mix an Avera and a Mitzvah together. So Rav Osef, if I would stop here and ask you the following question. Is the Psul of Yavesh and that of Gozel similar? Are they one unit, or are they dissimilar?
Dissimilar.
Because the psul of Gozel has nothing to do with Hilchas Lulav. It has to do with general mitzvahs. That all mitzvahs have to require pure mitzvah. It can't be an admixture of an avera to it, otherwise it becomes a mitzvah bab avera. And that's the psul of Lulav, and it applies kol shiva. Why? Because mitzvah bab avera means that the mitzvah is possible. It's completely excluded. It comes with an avera. He can't come in front of Hashem with a lulav that's stolen and say, God, I am coming to honor you lefnai v'lefnim in front of Hashem. That's a stolen lulav. That's fair. And we're going to have to ask ourselves why the same logic shouldn't apply in the case of what?
Yavesh.
Well, no, again. You give me the wrong answer because maybe you're answering a different question. Listen to my question. If mitzvah bab avera means I can't come in front of Hashem with a mitzvah and honor Hashem because it came through an avera, and this lulav is fair because it's a stolen lulav, that's a serious avera, then what other case in our Mishnah should fit that bill and should be disqualified for the very same reason a mitzvah bab avera? Asherah. Because the Asherah was worshipped. Again, here on Idachas is a little more complicated because that lulav was never worshipped. But certainly, the case of an Asherah, that lulav was worshipped. There's a terrible Avera, one of the three cardinal sins that was implemented on this lulav. And now you're going to take this lulav and you're going to use it in front of Hashem? An Avodah Zarah Dik Lulav? That should be mitzvah bab Avera. Yet the Gemara is going to say something totally different. As I said at the outset, very sophisticated and very abstract, something about the fact that since it's going to be burnt and it's designated for Sreifa, therefore it doesn't have the shear of a lulav, very, very difficult. Now the next word in the Gemara I want you to underline. What's the next word in the Gemara? Shenema. When I was a child, on Yomim Noroim, the Chazan of Ashul, his name was Chatzkel Riddle of Hashem, he's not alive anymore, he was one of the famous Chazanim in America, he was the Chazan of my father's Shul. He used to take the word Shenemar and make an entire beautiful song out of it. I'm not going to sing it for you, for two reasons. First of all, I don't have a good voice. And secondly, I don't remember the niggun exactly, but I remember the word Shenemar 50 million times, Shenemar. But what Rabosai, seriously, and with this we'll conclude, what is the significance of the word Shenema as a halachic?
Bringing a source.
No, but what's the significance? Halachic significance. Bringing a source is a very nice description. But that's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you for a halachic, you know, definition that cuts through to the very core of the halacha. As soon as I see the word Shenema, what do I know?
Doraisa.
And this Rabosai is going to open up an entire issue, a can of worms, so to speak, about what is the nature of this institution, this principle called Mitzvah Bab Avera. One school of thought is going to say it's a rabbinic institution. The Torah would allow you. You did the mitzvah, and technically there was nothing lacking or missing in the mitzvah. And the Rabbanan were upset about it. They thought this is not the proper way to do a mitzvah. And they went as far as to disqualify the mitzvah. Or it's Doraisa, and the Torah itself says it's possible. So I told you something that's not totally accurate. I said to you that whenever you see the word shenemar, you know by definition that we're dealing with what kind of halacha? The Doraisa, not necessarily so. What comes after the shenemar? Who can divide it into two parts?
A pasuk.
A pasuk in. That's, I need the word in, and then you have to fill in the blanks, Phil.
In Chumash.
Excellent. If it's a pasuk in Chumash, which Chumash? Any of the five. We're very liberal. All five.
I didn't say Tanakh.
Yes.
I said Chumash.
You see, if you were Hungarian, you wouldn't have said Chumash. You would have said Chimash. It's a Chimash. It's in the Chimash. Right? But if it's in Tanakh, that's already a different story. Does anybody know what that's called? And with that, I'll let you go.
Asmachta.
Not exactly. Asmachta is a little bit different. Let's not confuse that terminology. Asmachta means something that is, we're looking for almost a memory device, to attach it to. We're talking about a phrase, which is a very important phrase, called Divrei or Mi Divrei Kabbalah. Okay? Divrei Kabbalah, this is a base, by the way, it didn't come out so beautiful, means Tanakh. Any halacha that's derived from Tanakh, not from Chamisha Chumshei Torah, is called Midivrei Kabbalah. Now we have a third level, and that third level is called Derabbanan. Now where does Divrei Kabbalah fit in? Obviously it's wedged in between Doraisa and Derabbanan. But where does it really, where the leaves, turn? Where does the shape go? So here we have a famous Shitas HaRambam, which goes through all 14 books of the Rambam, that anything that's Midivrei Kabbalah has a quasi-Doraisa status. It's not exactly Doraisa, but let's say it's 90% of the way there. Other Rishonim disagree vehemently against the Rambam, and they hold that anything that's Midivrei Kabbalah has the same status as a Derabbanan. And here we have a famous Chiddush of the Ran. The Ran asks the question, the Gemara says in Masechta Megillah that in certain cities, we're not sure if they were walled at the time of Yeshua, not walled, Tveria, other cities. So the Gemara establishes that we should read the Megillah on both the first day and the second day, meaning on the 14th and the 15th of Purim. Of Adar Rishon, of course, this year, right? He's shaking his head. I see I can pull anything over you, Richard.
No,
it's on Adar Shein. There's a machlokas tanoim. The Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yossi agrees with you that we should be reading the Megillah on the first Adar, but we pasken like Chachamim on the second Adar. So 2 days. Now, usually in a Derabbanan, we say Sofik Derabbanan Lekula. In other words, choose one of the 2 days. I would choose the 14th. And let's read the Megillah on the 14th. Why do you have to read it again on the 15th? So the Ran says, because the mitzvah Megillah is not just the Derabbanan, it's upgraded to the level of Midivrei Kabbalah, because Megillah Esther is part of Tanakh, one of the 24 holy books, and therefore it has a quasi-Doraisa halacha. That Ran is very reminiscent of the Ran. Okay, I wish everyone a great day.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much.
And thank you very much.
Some bad.
If anyone wants to stick around, we can just have a kind of an informal.